So great to have Euclid legend, Notre Dame University running back, and NFL football player for many seasons, Tony Fisher, with us on the podcast this week. And it's kind of like coming home for you, right, Tony? You're the athletic director at the high school that you played at and were Mr. Football for, the Euclid High School Panthers.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate you having me on today. Life has come full circle. You know, like you mentioned, I played football here, won Mr. Football, went to Notre Dame, played in the NFL and all that good stuff. And it was an opportunity to be able to come back home and just to be able to come home and give to my community that helped raise me and afforded me many opportunities. You know, it's great. You know, I mean, we come from a great place right here at Euclid.
Yeah, Euclid is a great spot. Full disclosure to anybody that is just jumped onto this pod, hasn't listened to any other episodes of Telich Talks. I'm a Euclid High School grad, went to college in Ohio, and then, of course, started my broadcast here a million years ago, and really enjoy getting the backstory of what makes people go into the situations that they do. Let's go back many years. You're a young kid. You're a developing athlete in the system here. What were and who were some of the strong influences that you had as a young person?
My biggest influence has always been my mother and then my grandfather. But I've also had some other strong male figures. My godfather, who was he was in the United States Army, and then also one of my uncles who was instrumental in my development. But when it came to me playing football, Coach Mike Barnes, who is now the superintendent up at Mayfield, he got me playing. So when I was at Central, our middle school, as opposed to having me at running back, he actually had me as wide receiver because not many of our seventh graders could play on the eighth grade team. And he was like, Tony, I'm not going to just leave you down there on the eighth grade team. I'm going to move you up on, you're not going to leave you on the seventh grade team. I'm going to move you on the eighth grade team, but you're going to play wide receiver. Okay, whatever, because I could catch the ball now. And so it was my eighth grade years when they let me go back to running back. And then that's when Coach Banks started catching wind. Like, hey, There's another young kid now at the middle school level that might have an opportunity to be somebody special. And then once I got to the high school, Coach Bank wouldn't let me play on the freshman team. There was two of us that he wouldn't let play on the freshman team. So he brought us up. We played JV and sparingly on the varsity. But came a sophomore year is when, you know, things really started looking real good. So as a sophomore, I was fortunate enough to rush for over 1,500 yards. I had 1,600 yards and 25 touchdowns.
As a sophomore,
yep. And so it was first team all Ohio and all of that. So I'm like, okay, like this is fun again. You know, and then that's when all the comparisons to Rob and Pepe started coming.
When you say Rob, we're referring to Robert Smith, who went on to have a very strong NFL career with the Minnesota Vikings. He was a two-time winner of the Mr. Football Award here in Ohio, which was, that's like LeBron James won three basketball awards. Yes. This is, you know, Robert Smith is as high as it gets in this state.
Yeah, and that's one thing, like, you know, that I mean, you know, that's something that we always hung our hat on, that we were probably the only school that had basically three Mr. Footballs with Rob and his two, me and my one. And then we also had a Mr. Basketball with Emmanuel Smith. And then, you know, but when all those comparisons started coming, you know, obviously the rumblings for colleges and everything, you know, started happening. And they were like, hey, you know, you got to go down to Ohio State. You got to go to Ohio State. And I'm like, what's down at Ohio State? I wasn't a big college person because the only thing I ever saw was Notre Dame football. You know, it was like, you wake up on Saturday morning, you go watch your cartoons, then nothing but Notre Dame football. You know, but once all the comparisons started, you know, Coach Cooper was at Ohio State at the time. So I got to know Coach Cooper, Coach Jacobs, Coach Spencer, Tim Spencer, and all of them, and started doing a lot of visits and getting to know them very well. And it was like going into my sophomore year, my junior year, I went to a camp down there. And unfortunately, I got hurt, but they had offered me a scholarship as well. And then, you know, got hurt my junior year, only rushed for like 900 yards. So everybody's like, oh, he's a fluke or something.
He's a flash.
But then came back out my senior year, and it was go time pretty much. And, you know, Coach Bank, Coach Pignatello, and all of them, and we had a great offensive line my senior year. They put me in a position to be able to make the plays that I was able to do and was able to rush for over 2,100 yards, have 40 touchdowns, was the name Mr. Football. And that was when the big chase was on. It was like, so we had Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, Notre Dame. It was colleges coming from all out of the woodworks. And for me, I wanted to stay local or stay close to home, at least a good close driving proximity for my mother. So with her being right here in Euclid, to be able to drive 4 hours, you know, to either place was always great. And, you know, like when the stuff with Ohio State was happening, everybody just assumed that I was going there because I was going to follow in the footsteps of all our other great running backs. But it was like some certain stuff was said by Ohio State people that if I didn't go to Ohio State, then I wouldn't amount to anything.
Okay.
So therefore, it was like, huh, like this is how we're going to play this game. And then just so happened, Urban Meyer called. And this is, we're living at a townhouse, my mom and me, my younger brother and sister. And I get a phone call, and you got to think, I'm getting calls from everybody around the country.
Sure.
And just so happened, I answer the phone. I'm, hello? Hey, Tony, this is the coach from the favorite school that you always wanted to go to. And I'm like, who are you talking about? Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't have a caller ID at the time. So I just threw out, I think I blurted out Kent State. They're like, yeah. No. He was like, no, Tony, this is Urban Meyer from the University of Notre Dame. So me, I go into shock. Like, oh, man. Like, okay. Now we're talking.
He had you right there.
Yeah. And you know, like, Coach Meyer, he's a master recruiter. And, I mean, people saw that even when he was down at Ohio State. You know, and, like, Coach Meyer, what he did was he really recruited my mother. So he knew going to my mom was the route
sure.
to go. My mom got to know Coach Meyer real well, his wife Shelly and all of that. Coach Meyer will be right here at Euclid. He'll go to our basketball practices and go to some of the basketball games because he just loved how athletic I was.
And he was an assistant. He was a wide receiver.
Yes, he was a wide
coach,
receiver.
Right,
was a special teams
so
coach at the time.
He was out recruiting, just
exactly.
doing what
yep,
they do.
Yep, and then this is his area, especially with yep. him being from down the road. And, you know, he did a wonderful job just trying to recruit me and all of that good stuff. And it was funny because it was the night before National Signing Day. I had Nick Saban, who was at Michigan State at the time.
Yeah.
Coach Jacobs, who was one of the head recruiters out of Ohio State, with me. I mean, he was circling around the city. And then also had Urban. Everybody was all just circling around and all. And I remember, I think you guys, it might have been Dan.
Yeah,
I think it might have been Dan, because I don't think it was. I think Dan actually reached out to me, Dan Coughlin. He had reached out to me like, Tony, have you made a decision yet? I was like, no. I was like, I'm going to make it first thing in the morning for everybody
yeah.
to know. And I remember.
That's got to be really stressful.
Oh, it was. Like, cause, yeah, it was crazy. You know, and so I went to sleep that night because I had a basketball game at up here at Euclid. And went home, woke up that next morning at 6:30. My mom's like, Tony, what are you going to do? And I just
so you kept this from her.
Yeah,
you
even kept
sure
it from her.
It
and
right
I was like,
you.
I didn't know what I was going to do. So we was just talking for a little bit. So I go upstairs, come back downstairs, come out downstairs with my Notre Dame sweatshirt on. And she's like, is that where you're going to go? I was like, yeah. She's like, can I call Urban? Go ahead, Mom. And so she goes here. She calls Urban. Everybody's going crazy. And I think you guys found out. And I had to tell Coach Bank and all of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they was upset. But then it was like after a while, they was like, you know what? It's paving your own path.
Yeah.
You know, and it all turned out for the best. So
what were Saturdays like in South Bend?
Oh, it was great. You know, like when you finally, like just being on that campus and you see how rich the history and everything is
yeah.
and the fans that come out, they're rabid fans. They're just like everywhere else. You know, they're rabid fans. They're coming out and supporting you. And, you know, you go to the Basilica and go to the Mass and then you walk from the church all the way to the stadium. And it's like it's no other. It's hard to even describe because
yeah.
it's just one of those things that you see on the movie Rudy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not how it is, but that's really how it is.
It's the real deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
they did kind of probably amplify a few of the things
yeah.
in the movie, you know, for cinematic
yep.
purposes. But it's Notre Dame. The touchdown Jesus
mm-hmm.
is looking down
yep.
at you,
yep.
you know,
exactly.
Watching your every move. You probably sense that he's even following you with his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you dealt with the pressure. It's Notre Dame.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was because, you know, when you go to Notre Dame, you know, everybody knows that it got high academic standards and stuff like that. And I tell people, like, when you go to Notre Dame, it's not about football all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you're really going there. They're preparing you for the real world. Like, yes, wins and losses count. You know, you got to go out there and do well on the football field. But it's really developing you into a nice, good character.
Yeah.
Strong human beings. Are you going to go out there and make an impact in the community? How are you going to do service for other communities? And, you know, and at the end of the day, just having a degree from Notre Dame, you know, it's going to take you a lot of places because you're always going to run into somebody that worked. I mean,
yeah.
that went to Notre Dame.
The
that
alumni
you, that
reach has
exactly.
to be incredible.
I mean, you think about you worked with somebody for a very long time. I didn't even know Mr. Coughlin was a Notre Dame alumni till a couple weeks ago. And when he said, I was like, are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah. And he asked me, he's like, Tony, what dorm did you stay in? I was like, I stayed in Soren Hall. He's like, oh, you was one of the special kids because Soren Hall is our oldest dorm,
gotcha.
And the president of the college stays there.
Oh.
And just being there, and you know you had good support. a support system from all the professors and all of that, you know, they really made you prepared for when it was time to come out in the real world. And mm-hmm. I can't thank that university enough.
And what did you take when you were there in terms of where was the slant on your education? What were you preparing yourself for? Sure, you wanted to be a pro football player, which you became.
Right.
But what were you thinking about?
Well, I went in there thinking I was just going to go into communications.
Okay.
At NBC right there on campus. And so I thought I was going to go into communications and you know, hopefully just study, you know, do like broadcasting and sports communications and all of that good stuff. But it was just so happened I ended up going in for economics and computer applications. And how did I get into that? I have absolutely no clue, you know, but I've always been fascinated, obviously, about the economy and how money runs and how it works and, you know, how different demographics, how it could really influence people and everything. And the computer apps was just one of those added twists. Like, okay, let's see how can I put in computer programming and, you know, how to write, you know, different websites and all of that stuff. So it all added up. And then it was just like, okay, what am I going to do if I don't make it to the pros? And I honestly didn't have a true backup plan at this point.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, it was the pros or nothing. And, you know, I'm one of the few that's, you know, been fortunate enough to have it work out that way. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with it.
You know, you have to, like, stress to anybody that's young that's listening to this that it's great to dream big. Mm-hmm. And for you, dreaming big was the National Football League. But it's also good to be a realist and to really bolster your upbringing, your education with, as you said, you're doing computer stuff.
Yep.
This was fairly new in, you know, the internet era and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I tell our kids now. You know, I'm like, look, yeah, we all want to play in the NFL. That's everybody's dream. But when you look at it, the NFL draft is only, what, 256 kids get taken.
Yeah.
And then you might see another, like, 500 to almost 1,000 probably undrafted free agents. They'll be on the team. But at the end of the day, there's only spots for 53, and then you got 10 on a practice squad.
Yeah.
Not everybody's getting a job in the NFL.
Yeah.
But there's other jobs in the NFL that still have you with the team. You might not be playing that sport, but you could go and get a job from, you know, marketing, sales, social media.
Yeah.
All there's other different avenues to get you in professional sports. You just don't always have to be a player. But I tell our kids, like, look, don't count on being a professional player, because is the 9 times out of 10 it's not going to happen, because it's only 3% that actually make it.
Yeah.
You know, and that 3% is still very slim, and the odds of them even making it to a pension is even slimmer.
Yeah, and you did make it to a pension.
Yes.
So, okay, so let's get to the pros first.
Mm-hmm.
Saturdays in South Bend, as you said, were just super special.
Mm-hmm.
The reputation that, and then the fact that you had basically all your games were televised because of the Notre Dame network, as it were. The notoriety, just being on campus as a football player and a real contributing player to the team, had to have its advantages, but also the pitfalls too.
Yeah, there's always, I mean, at Notre Dame or just even in the pros itself, you know, like, once you get hurt, there's always somebody right behind you that's
right
going to come in. So, like, I was able to start as a sophomore, and then my junior year, I got banged up a little bit, but I was still the starter. Then my senior year, I ended up tearing both my hamstrings, so it kind of gave somebody an opportunity to really kind of, like, go ahead and just take the lead and all of that stuff. And I think that really hurt my status as getting drafted and all of that. But it also helped build my character. You know, I had to become mentally strong to know that, hey, you know, these dreams might not become a reality. But I worked hard and all of that stuff, and just so happened, I was getting phone calls from some teams in the third round, in the fourth round, and then they kind of keep you on hold for a long time, so they don't want no other team to call you or come and pick you up. And it was a big cat and mouse chess game when it comes to that draft. But then when I didn't get my name called, it was a little disheartening. But we kind of had a plan, and just talking with my agent at the time, he just said, look, going to Green Bay is going to give you the best opportunity to be able to make a team. It's like they got one stud, which was Amon Green, and everybody else is just free game. He's like, Tony, they always keep 3 to 4 running backs on every team. And so I went into camp. I was healthy. The one thing that they loved about me was my athletic ability, and I could pick up the pass block, and I was smart enough. And they was like, Tony, if you could protect number four, you could play anywhere in the league. And number four was Brett Favre.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, let me learn all these pass protections and all of that stuff, and I'm going to go out there and do stuff that I know other people don't want to do. And so that was pass protect, and I could line up as a wide receiver. So I went back to my middle school days, and I could run routes as a wide receiver and stuff as well.
They
used to have me do it at Notre Dame, like, because Urban Meyer was our wide receiver's coach. He's like, I'm going to use that wide receiver sometimes too. And then once the Packers realized that I could do all of that stuff, I instantly became their third down back as a rookie. So they had me in the game on crunch time and all of that stuff. And once I gained the trust of Brett, it was the sky's the limit from there. And Brett was like one of those people that he used to say, "Hey, Tony, don't do this. Don't block that guy. Just go out, run these routes or do whatever." And if something go wrong, uh-huh, I'm like, "Brett, it's on you. It ain't on me." You know? And so I get off the side. I come off the sideline. The coach was like, "What was you doing?" I was like, "Hey, you go ask that guy over there. He the one who told me what to do." You know, but it was great. You know, I mean,
was there
I
went friction with that? I mean,
no,
the fact that
no.
you were taking like
no.
the heat of what Brett Favre's telling you to do versus what mm-hmm. the OC
I mean,
was
cause
saying?
At the time, you had to think, my rookie year, that was 02, so Brett was already, that was at least 10 years in, and he was the highest paid quarterback in the league. So they knew that he was the old gunslinger. Like, sometimes
yeah.
Brett is just going to draw something up in the dirt.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you ain't, what are you going to say to
little
him?
Playground
yeah,
ball.
You can't say anything to him because most of the time he's always been successful with it. And they didn't get mad at me because it's like, if I tell them that
points.
He said it, like, all right, go ahead.
Uh-huh.
You know, you just got to do what you got to do. But you get quarterbacks like that. I mean, I'm sure A-Rod was Aaron Rodgers was doing that as well, even though I played with him. But he didn't do it that early on in his career. But as his career progressed, like, yeah, now he's like, hey, just do this route as opposed to with somebody else. And we got to believe that Tom Brady and Peyton Manning did the same thing as well.
100%.
Yep.
Have you seen Hard Knocks at all?
No,
I
have not. Yeah, I have not. Like, I'm behind.
It's
like,
basically,
I'm shocked.
Have you seen Aaron Rodgers with the New York Jets? Because
right.
it's the Aaron Rodgers
yeah, it's
show.
Funny because I worked with all of those guys when I was working with the Packers. You know, so from Aaron, Alan Lazard, Billy Turner, Randall Cobb, all of those guys that's there with him, they was all in Green Bay at the same time. And
yeah.
so I'm very familiar with those guys. And, I mean, you can't do nothing but wish them the best. You
yeah.
know, at the end of the
I
day,
mean,
I mean, he did 18 great years with the Packers. And no other team could say that they had over 30-plus years of great quarterback play. And if Jordan Love, if they hit on him, which he's showing to be pretty solid right now.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a pretty special organization.
It's amazing that, you know, they did it the right way. The Chiefs did it the right
mm-hmm.
way. You know, with setting the table for Mahomes so he could watch his first
yep.
year and then take over. Aaron sat for a couple of
mm-hmm.
years, then they made way for him. There was friction there, but yet all we've seen is him win MVP,
yep.
MVP after MVP. Really kind of cool to see someone be so good at what they do. And even now in his advanced age,
right.
he's slinging it all over the practice field for the Jets, looking one way, throwing another. Talking up his receivers, really seems like a cool teammate, you know, to be with. And you have the same kind of aversion with Brett Favre,
mm-hmm.
who is kind of like a man's man running
right.
the show, right?
Yeah, like with Brett, like you said, he was the man's man because he was one of those guys that liked to prank and tell jokes and all of that
yeah.
stuff. The game used to be on the line, and like you would think that somebody's going to be real and on like clapping their hands, like, "Hey, let's go, let's go, let's go." Brett would be in there. He'll be rapping, singing songs, passing gas, a little bit of everything. Like, man, hey, y'all, let's relax, man. If we go out there execute, we're going to do what we're supposed to do. We'll win this game. And just so happened, for the most part, we always did it. Like, my whole time in Green Bay, we had one bad year. Almost 40 people going to IR. And
wow.
it was like we had a platoon of people from every single position. You can't win like that.
No.
And, you know, it happens, you know, but we all see it happens to every team at some point. But, like, being around Brett, you know, just having somebody like that, a true legend. I told Brett when I got there, I was like, my senior year, I used to wear your Nike shoes. And I was like, I had some of my best games in your Nike shoes and all of that.
Wearing
you
some
know.
Old dude,
yeah,
old quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It's not like a young basketball player saying, I've got, you know, wore my Air Jordans,
right.
and they turned out great for me.
Yep.
Well, it's kind of cool that in your career in college, you're at an iconic spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing gets more iconic than South Bend, Indiana. And then you go to the pros,
yep.
and you're in the other iconic
yep.
spot.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an idea of what a Sunday is like in the middle of Cheeseland at Lambeau with the leap, with the fans, all of that kind of
yeah,
a
it is,
rigmarole.
It's crazy just because, like, when you're in a small town, Green Bay only has 110,000 people. And so when you come, like you're driving up, like when you get off Highway 172, you come over the bridge, you could kind of see the stadium.
Yeah.
So you get off and you're just riding through like a normal town, like how we could ride through Euclid,
yeah.
Minner, Willoughby, whatever. And then out of nowhere, you just see a big old stadium. It's like, wow, like this is the stadium. So on one side of the stadium, we have a clock and it's always on Lombardi time. And if you was ever around Lombardi, you know, everything you was always 15 minutes early. You know, and so, like, when I was a player, that was one thing that they always stressed. They always stressed, you know, all of the key facts that, you know, Coach Lombardi always said makes a good team. So, from discipline, being on time, you know, character, your brotherhood, and all of that good stuff. And, you know, just being there in Green Bay, how bad the people really hold on to that tradition is incredible. You know, it's like, it's the only team where that you have season ticket holders waiting for over 40 years in order to get on the list.
And of course, you know, the people in the town own the team.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's incredibly unique. Mm-hmm. So Sundays are just like a head spin for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was great. You know, you see the fans, like, it's funny because, like, when people can't park inside of Lambeau Field, the parking lot, they park on the neighbor's grass and stuff like that. So you pretty much, your front yard becomes a parking lot.
Sure.
And so people are charging $40, $50.
Oh, yeah.
You know, park on there. Some of them get porta potties and they put them out there and all that other good stuff. I mean, it is just the ultimate, you know, big tailgate that people just love to come to. And it's just the experience. Like, the Green Bay Packer fans, they welcome everybody to come in. Yeah. Like, hey, you just come on in, we'll show you a good time. And, like, I'll say that's one thing that, you know, you kind of miss. You know, like, I'm in high school. I don't know if high schools kind of do that type of stuff, but to see the stuff that the Packers do compared to other professional teams, it's nothing like it.
Did you ever have to pay for a beer or anything like that?
No, you would never have to do any of that. And that's the cool thing, is because in Green Bay, you know, you have to, like, as a normal football player, they're always going to be seen in the public. So it's almost it's a duty to do service work and everything in Green
Cool.
Bay.
Yeah.
So if we go out to eat, me and you could be sitting there having something to eat. That's, you know, a fan will walk by and be like, hey, John, hey, Tony, and they'll keep it moving. Or they will just buy you a drink, and then, you know, or somebody might just buy you a dinner, be like, hey, good game.
They'll give you your space.
Exactly. Yeah, they will never just bombard you with anything. They, you know, they're just there to, hey, they show their appreciation, and then they treat you just like any other normal person.
That's kind of cool.
Yep.
So let's get to the point where you saw the writing on the wall that the career is only going to take you so far.
Mm-hmm.
What was your mindset like?
Well, I mean, you know, that was a good thing. That's when the Notre Dame education started kicking in. So my whole time while I was playing, I was always working with my financial advisor. And so, like, for my economics and computer applications degree, my rookie year, I started doing an internship with Smith Barney, and that's how I met my financial advisor.
Okay.
And so, you know, he taught me how to, you know, start investing my money. So I don't do any investments or anything without him, or any big decisions without, you know, speaking with my financial advisor.
Sure.
And we just got to make sure that it makes sense. And so I've always been able to put my money off to the side, because in Green Bay, you don't have to buy anything big or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I just kept a townhouse there. And then I didn't buy my first home. I bought my mother a home in 2004, I think it was. It was like 4 or 3, because I think I bought her a car first. Because I was like, hey, you got to take care of mommy first.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so took care of her. And then my career came to an end at the end of the beginning of 2008, because I blew my knee out when I was with the Rams. And I was okay with it, just because, you know, just having a different conversations with my financial advisor. He's like, hey, you're okay. You're in a good position. You know, as long as we don't do anything too crazy, you know, this money will continue to grow.
Yeah.
And I was already investing in real estate and some of the right stocks that was able to give me the right dividends.
Okay.
And all of that stuff. And so what I did was, my first year out of the league, I just came back here and I was coaching up under Tom Gibbons. So I coached for 4 years here. And then opportunity came up where that I could get a job with the Green Bay Packers again.
Yeah.
And so I went back up there. I was their player alumni specialist for 10 years. And
what does a player alumni specialist
do? So what
do?
I did, I helped all of I helped all our alumni to understand their benefits, different appearances. So it was the benefits, appearances, different community service work. We did massive fundraising events and all of that. And then I also helped the current players with their foundations, their camps, community work as well. And I was kind of like almost an in-house marketing guy for those guys.
Okay.
You know, so I'll help them get different things set up with their foundation or different not foundation, but different community service events. But, you know, with doing that, I did that for 10 years, and then it brings us to current day. You know, after the 10 years, it's like, hey, Tony, we got a position opening up. Would you like to come back on to be our athletic director? So went through the interview process with all of that stuff. And, you know, been here for the last 2 months. And I mean, it's been a whirlwind.
It sure seems
for you. No sleepless nights. You know, it's like you're always working. But I was always used to that, because I was always doing that stuff up in Green Bay. And so far, it's been a great deal.
That's really cool. You know, I can also recall some former players from our area that I've spoken with over the years. Dante Whitner comes to mind. Dante, you know, a great career at Ohio State, and of course played in the pros, played for the Browns for several seasons, and he's been big on, you know, financial strength and knowledge.
Financial literacy. Yep.
But there you go. That's big. You said it perfectly. Yep. And I guess the reason I want to kind of belabor that point before we talk a little bit about coming home and being the athletic director here at your high school is when you started 10 years ago doing the liaison thing for the, how was that thought of really learning the financial literacy, how was that taken versus over the span of the 10 years? Was there more attention brought to that by players where, you know, they really realized or it dawned on them that this is incredibly important versus just saying, I've got all this money and it's going to last forever?
I mean, you know, some guys get it, some guys don't. At the end of the day, not everyone is going to sign a five-year deal, $100-something million dollars. Let's just be honest. You know, but when you see the amount of money that these guys can make, if they just make it to 4 years in the NFL, you should have $3 to $4 million.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what. You know, and if you're not out there spending your money crazily, you'll be okay, you know, but a lot of guys, what they do is, you know, we see big chunks of change or big chunks of money, you know, per week, every other week, however, each organization does it differently. When you see the amount of those checks, you're like, wow. So some guys are going out there spending that money constantly, constantly. And then in the off season, you're still spending money like that, but you're not getting paid.
Yeah, no
checks
in the off
season. You know, so therefore, you know, some guys are like, oh, dad. I really overspent, so now I got to start cutting back. Or some guys go out there, they got to take out loans just to survive through the offseason. You know, but then, you know, like one thing about the Packers is they put you through different financial literacy courses, you know, and it's pretty much mandatory. And that's what's good about the NFL is that it's mandatory that you put your rookies through all of this stuff. So you got to teach them to try to be smart with your money. Before you hire a financial advisor, make sure that you speak to or you get them background checks. Make sure they have true references, that they're certified with the NFL. And, you know, like as time went on, you could see certain guys really understand, like, man, I'm not going up here. I'm not about to buy a $500,000 to $1 million home in Green Bay if I don't plan on living here.
Sure.
Why would you do it? You know, like you do stuff like that in place that you plan on spending long times there.
Makes the most sense.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have those conversations with some of the guys, and then you see some of them actually starting to heed to some of that information that you're giving them. And it's good to see when guys be like, hey, you know what, Tony, I listened to what you said. I went to these certain people to do certain things.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, just a progression of them just maturing as time goes on.
Tony, by virtue of the position you played, you know, running back, they just use you and then toss you aside. Yeah. In comes the next one. You guys are banged up. You're getting concussions, all of that sort of stuff. Did that factor in to you thinking more and more, let's think long term in your financial literacy progression?
Yeah, most definitely. I'm going to be honest. Like everything that I do, like I said, I don't do anything without speaking with my financial advisor. And so with everything, like at least, you know, when you make it to the NFL, the one thing that you do want to make it to is pension. So as long as you get those 3 years, four games in, you know you're going to get a pension. And then it was like, okay, after that, every other year, that's just gravy on it. You know, so that's just some more chocolate on the ice cream and all of that. But then it was like when my career was over, it's like, okay, I know I got a pension coming from the NFL. Now what is next to do? You know, and then, like I said, I was fortunate enough to get that job with the Packers. And the first question I asked is like, hey, how long do I have to work here in order to get another pension? And so to be an administrative executive within the NFL, you only had to do 5 years.
So you more than satisfied that.
Exactly. So then I went and got that pension. Wow. So then it was like, okay, now I'm in my new spot. Hey, how many years? Because I'm like, I don't plan on getting another job right now because I'm enjoying what I'm doing now, you know, being an athletic director. What do I have to do to, you know, get another pension there? And so my goal is to go ahead and, you know, do this job until I'm secured another pension and then keep on trying to help these kids out as much as I can.
Tony Fisher, the man with the pensions.
Yes, sir.
I love it.
Yep, gotta get it.
But yet, getting back to the running back dilemma, you're probably very aware now of how it's been devalued.
Yeah, it is.
And the Nick Chubbses of the world, obviously Kareem doesn't even have a job as we stand here on the 21st of August. really wild, the turn of events for running backs.
It's incredible, because you think about way back in the day, the prime spots was to be a quarterback and a running back.
Yeah.
Those were the guys that was supposedly like going to make the money, and those are the ones that teams mostly leaned on. But it's like, as years went on, the quarterback obviously became more and more valued. The running back is pretty much, like, honestly, they look at the running back now almost like certain kickers to a degree. You know, like, they always feel that they could pull up the next one and they could go out there and do the job.
Plug them in.
But
yeah,
when you got somebody as special as, you know, Nick Chubb, you know, King Henry, Christian McCaffrey, who's doing good.
Yeah.
I mean, Adrian Peterson, you know, back when in his prime. There are some guys that I guess that they say are generational guys,
yeah,
that can make a difference, you know. But then when you see somebody like you mentioned, as talented as Kareem, that doesn't have a job, that makes no sense, considering how strong he came out his rookie year.
Yeah, and then led the league in rushing.
And then he had some great years even so far with the Browns. And then all of a sudden, oh, he's diminished. How is he diminished when he's barely even splitting carries with Nick? That doesn't make sense. So he should be as fresh as can be.
He should be.
You know, so you got to give him the opportunities. And he's somebody that I still know that has a lot of value out there. I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, I look at Jamal Williams, who used to be with the Packers, who was with the Lions last year. Yep. He led the NFL in touchdowns. And then they wouldn't even give him a new deal. You know, and I know Jamal probably would have took another 2-3 year deal, but yeah, he had to go down to the Saints and everything. And it's crazy, you know, and it's sad to see how they don't value this position. And I know that Saquon and them was trying to get a new contract, yep, and he couldn't even get a new contract. You don't give somebody who came back off of an ACL, now he's stronger than ever, to a 1-year deal. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, but
it does. It's sad. Kind of crazy.
And now you look at even Zeke, what, 7 years in?
Yeah.
And I mean, I know he took a lot of hits early on in his career,
yeah,
but now he's signing a 1-year minimal deal. You know, it's wild the way that they're doing running backs.
Did you have any severe concussions over the course of your career? Anything to be concerned about?
I don't think I had any to be too concerned about. You know, I think I probably had like one or two documented, but I played in an era where that you get dinged up. It's like, okay, take a little smelling salt, sniff it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like knock out the cobwebs, but then
but
you go back
upright
out there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you,
yeah,
back. Eric Dickerson, mm-hmm, you know, upright,
yep,
style.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know
and
if that.
I mean, it's a bigger target. You know,
yeah,
I was 6'2". Eric Dickerson is 6'4".
Yeah.
You know, so we were bigger backs that took a lot of hits and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, they teach you quick. Hey, you better start lowering those pads. But I wasn't one of those guys that would lead with the head and all of that. And, I mean, you know, like a lot of the concussion stuff that used to happen back in the day, most of them were pretty much happened on, like, kickoffs. So you got guys, you know, that
steam
was always trying to. And then remember, like, there was a time where that they used to have linemen in the wedge,
yeah,
and so you got smaller guys, we're
trying
running into a brick wall,
pounds.
Yeah, and they used to, like, I will say this, it used to hurt.
Yeah. Oh, I
it used
imagine
to hurt, but it was just part of the game, you know. And a lot of that stuff, you know, like I know that, you know, we like people want to sue the NFL and say that the equipment and all of that stuff was inadequate and all of that, but at the end of the day, guess what? This is what we signed up for. We knew what we was getting into. We're,
yeah,
in the entertainment business.
It's eyes wide open.
Yeah, it's the one true gladiator sport that's out there that's legal.
Yeah.
You know, and
it really is.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. You know, it's unfortunate that some of these people, you know, who have passed away from CTE, you know, it happened,
yeah,
to them, and you wish that it was something that they knew of earlier in life, you know. But, you know, it's like the more and more research that come out, you know, it really was a boxer's disease first, because
for the most,
yeah, it was called punch drunk.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I, even though there's no true way to be able to diagnose it,
yep,
that's what it usually happened. It was more in boxers than it was even in football players,
yep,
and stuff now. But since football is a $1 billion sport, it's always going to be, you know, broadcast in the football era.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, now, Tony, at Euclid High School, there's no concussions.
Yeah.
But I bet there's some days your head's probably hurting from all the dilemmas that you have to deal with as an athletic director. But that's,
yeah,
that's part of the job, you,
yeah,
know, making sure the facilities are there, the kids are, the teams are operating. Mm-hmm. What's that been like for you in the short time?
I'll tell you this, it's been wonderful. It's one of those things where that I wake up every day and I'm happy to come to work. Like, when like, oh, what is going to be the new thing that I got to deal with today? You know, and like, I don't know what a regular day is just yet here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm hoping one day I'll find out. But at this time, you know, I'm having a ball, you know, just being around some of our young football players, our soccer teams, our volleyball teams. it's just been, you know, it's just been great to see how welcoming and encouraging people have been since I've been here, you know, been back in the community. You know, I'm just enjoying this time and spending time with the family and friends and just getting to know people again. And it's like, it's just been a long time coming, you know, just being gone for the last 10 years and now I'm back home. You know, it couldn't be any better for me. It's like a dream come true.
And Tony, you being such a big part of high school football when you played before you went away to Notre Dame, come back into this area, you're probably sitting there saying, wow, the level of play has gone up even more so than you can recall when you played.
Oh, most definitely, because now it seems like there's more dominant teams around here. Because like back in our day, you know, it was only St. Ed's, Ignatius. It was us as a public school. Minner wasn't even as bad. I know Minner had a stretch after like our little stretch went on. But now you have teams all over the place. Yeah, and then when I look in our conference in this GCC, it is unreal, you know. And I mean, one day, you know, we plan on having the Euclid Panthers back up, you know, at top, you know, where we're used to being. But it's going to take a little bit of time, you know, and as long as we continue to build our program and, you know, get the right people in the right places to be and put them in position to be successful, you know, we plan on having big things in the next few years.
Well, I can't describe enough to you how much of a pleasure it's been to chat with you. A couple of old Panthers chopping it up a little bit.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, it was just great to see you and your family this past weekend. You know, I mean, it was a long time coming for you. Like, we should have been named a press box after you, considering your legendary career, you know, but to just be here, like, this was my first major event, you know, so for me to take part in that, you know, it was great, and I hope you guys really enjoyed it.
We really did, and I can't thank you enough and can't wish you enough goodwill and good luck as you continue down your career getting another pension.
Oh, most definitely. I can't wait. So once in a few years when I'm in my 50s, maybe early 60s, I'll go ahead and just say I'm done with everything. You know, just sit back and watch the kids grow.
Thanks very much to Tony Fisher, athletic director at Euclid High School here in Ohio. Best of luck to Tony. And if you like this interview, please rate, subscribe, review, and share on social media. For Tony Fisher, John Telich here on Telich Talks, and we'll see you the next time around.